Without a ball, it's just a court. And without your spirit, it's only a game. So, together with the fans, we bring our best. For your next pregame, let's share a twist on a classic, the Hennessy Margarita. A squeeze of fresh lime juice and a bit of agave syrup, topped off with ice and a salted rim. Mix it, shake it, pour it, and enjoy the spirit of the NBA. Hennessy, without your spirit, it's only a game. 21 and older, please drink responsibly.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody? Happy Wednesday. We got quite a lineup for y'all today. Before we get to it, make sure y'all subscribe to Point Four wherever you listen to your podcast and follow us on all social channels at Point Four. Don't miss a thing. This past week, I feel like I was on the edge of my chair. Both NFC and AFC playoff games, my Niners squeaked it out. I know y'all counted us out, but here we are back in the Super Bowl. I don't know. I'm always affiliated with winners. But we'll be diving into who we have winning the Super Bowl. And to remind y'all, I've had a 49ers blanket since I was 8 years old. So real fan.
And then, of course, we got to discuss Luka Doncic's 73-point game and where that ranks in history.
Yeah, I don't know if people are going to like my take too much. But
I can't wait to hear the take. I want to know. I actually want to hear it, to be honest with you, because with the game, there's a whole lot of deciphering and numbers and it's a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah, because I was actually watching that game. Once he got to like 30, like five, it was the second quarter, so I was watching. So, yes, we will dive into that. Lastly, our guest on the pod this week is the one and only Ernie Johnson from Warner Brothers, Turner Sports, the whole conglomerate. So diving in there. Now you already know what it is. Point Forward is presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code Point Forward, because life's more fun when you're in on the action. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details.
Point Forward.
This is Andre Iguodala.
This is Evan Turner.
We're trying to get to the true essence of not just basketball, but life, and that means something.
It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory.
That level of understanding has been taken out of the game.
Now you already know what it is. Point Forward is presented by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. Check out what DraftKings has to offer this season with code Point Forward, because life's more fun when you're in on the action. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details. I know everyone was tuned in to the football game on Sunday. Obviously, I want to know what the numbers look like when they come back. So the Super Bowl is officially set. The San Francisco 49ers, my San Francisco 49ers versus my mother's Kansas City Chiefs. My mom's from Kansas City.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So it's
You should take her.
She should go by herself. I just don't like rockets. I don't like too many people in the same place at the same time. It's just a lot. What's that phobia called?
Weirdo phobia. Social anxiety. The fishbowl syndrome.
This is true. So, what are the DraftKings odds for Super Bowl champ and MVP? 49ers opened up a 2.5-point favorite. Quickly bet down to 1-point favorites on Sunday night. Over 80% of the bets placed on DraftKings on this matchup are on the Chiefs, which is super interesting. So the 49ers are favorites to win the Super Bowl. I like that.
How does that shock you?
Because Mahomes just, he's finding a way to get to the Super Bowl no matter what. Like, his tight end getting old. He's got a lot of pressure from a whole fan base of musical artists, or I should say entertainment artists.
Word to
Aretha Franklin. She said she wore nice gowns. She didn't say anything about her voice. Not my words. Don't get mad at me. So, E.T., bro, you saw that, E.T., right?
No, I saw that, bro. But this is the only thing I'll say, G. I know she can. She can write the shit out of a song. And when a song hits, it hits. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't know because I don't listen, but I believe you.
Yeah, if you listen to Trouble, like the song she wrote about John Mayer, like some of that shit hit. Or like The Best Day. If I Was a Daughter, it would bring a tear to my eye. But other than that, I feel you. I feel you. Let's keep going. We're not straight up.
No, I mean, I feel like that needs to be said. So thank you for the education.
The miseducation
of Taylor Swift. Yes.
Yeah.
MVP odds for the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes is the highest odds at +130. Followed by Brock Purdy, interesting, at +210. He did come through in the clutch for us.
I want to mix this through. Up. I dig you, bro, but the white running back needs to be the MVP, man. Like, just for the sake, like, Christian McCaffrey is really doing work, bro. I'm a Brock Purdy fan, dog, but Christian McCaffrey really matters.
Travis Kelce put on a show this past week, Sunday. He's at +1,500. He's been playing well in the playoffs. He broke Jerry Rice's reception record for playoffs, I believe, for the playoffs. Most receptions in NFL playoff history.
Wow.
Debo Samuel is a +2,000. He would be my bet if the Niners win. I felt like he was the X factor in the game this past week against the Lions. George Kittle was a +6,000 as well. So mainly quarterbacks.
That's crazy, George Kittle's a plus.
Yeah.
He might not catch. He always has like the biggest catches, like most important catches, like all the time. So it's kind of crazy. He might only get like three or four, but it's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. He makes big, big, big catches, right? Tough dude.
And he had a crazy block on your boy last game from the Lions. They kept rewinding it.
That's a big boy. Damn. I want to know if he's probably really strong if he held off Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still sorry Detroit lost. It's just a backbreaker just to see a team lose a game like that.
No, I mean, it sounds like the playoffs.
Nah, I hear you, G, but damn.
Yeah.
I mean, that was wild. Yeah. What else?
The NBA season is in full swing, and when I can't get enough of the action on the court, I spice things up betting on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Right now, new customers bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code POINTFORWARD. New customers can bet just $5 on the NBA and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code POINTFORWARD. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino Resort, Kansas, 21 and older. Age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/basketball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
So we heard him say. What did we hear him say, E.T.?
Shoot. After Luka dropped the 73 points, man, and some people are saying that it goes down arguably one of like the greatest games or the greatest game in NBA history. Because you compare it to Kobe's 81, I think Kobe only had like 3 assists. Luka had like 73 points. What was it, 7 assists, yeah, like 9 rebounds?
Yeah. I thought he had a double-double on rebounds.
Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? But I'm saying like... The only other game that really came to mind as of recent was when James Harden went and got that, what was that, 16-18?
Yes, he did. That was wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, where do you think that game, the Luka Doncic game, ranks amongst you know, some of the best games in history? Or is it all gas? 73 points is crazy in a span of 48 minutes, Doc.
I'm trying to put it in the right perspective. He made a shot in the third quarter over the Johnson kid, who's looks really good. I like him a lot. That's his name, right? Jalen Johnson? That's his name?
Jalen Johnson. He's balling.
I like him a lot.
The exile kid from Duke.
Yeah. I'm a whoop his behind when I see him. But this kid's incredible. He could play some ball. And he was playing really good defense on Luka. And Luka hit a crazy step back, top of the key. Tough shot. But as I'm watching the game, he had a tough sidestep baseline going to his right in front of the Atlanta bench. That was impressive. They started doubling him in the fourth quarter, getting the ball out of his hands full court, which led to some open corner threes. Dallas did a good job of, you know, winning the game. It was still a close game, but it looked different than the Kobe game. I mean, you saw a few clips where it was just like layups to the basket, the defense, you know, defense of Atlanta, suspect. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's what's so crazy. Because, like, the next step, you see so many people, like, it's been, like, what, 60-plus point games, like, the past week or so. And when it's coming down to it, it's like, I remember playing open gym, like, versus regular students in high school. And I feel like gym class is only 35 minutes, and I put up, like, 60 points. And I felt like, but that made sense. Because I was playing versus kids that, like, never really hooped. I hoop every day. But, like, a dude scoring 73 points or dudes getting, like, to 60 points over, like, a 48-minute span, what does that mean? Are our players really that good, or has the game kind of, or, like, defense has gotten watered down, bro? Like, what does that mean for the game? You know what I'm saying? Because now there's going to be so many numbers. Like, even Tatum, he's at 11K already. Like, to do those comparisons and to hit those runs, it's like, has it been shifted a bit? Like, kind of how they say the quarterback numbers do in football.
Yeah, I do think the offensive players have gotten better. And I do think they have a different type of package. Like, they've added that extra layer of creativity to get an open look. You know, like, I'm seeing Maxey do what he does. C.J. McCollum was early on it. Dame was early on it. I mean, James Harden. I think everyone was talking about how Steph has kind of changed the game with the three-point shot. You know, we were speaking to our guy last night. Shout out to our man Yoni, and he was saying, you know, in his opinion, there's only been three guys who have changed the way the game is played. It was Kareem, it was Magic. It was Magic, MJ, Steph.
Yeah.
But I do think James Harden and his step back has added another layer to the game of basketball in terms of the way it's played offensively and the creation of space. The way these kids, Darius Garland, the way he's step back.
Yeah, it's and a pain pat. Yeah.
I do think there's an extra half of a step in there. Like, they've came up with, coined this term called gathering, gather step, or the ball is not fully gathered to where you can have a ball rolling in your hand, and you can get off three or four steps. I think if you want to add all that, you got to bring back not fouling, but in terms of physicality. Like, I've always said this. I went to a WNBA game, and I said to myself, whoa, up close and personal, like, they play. Like, they compete. They get after it. Like, the physicality is a different level than ours. Like, it's more physical in the W than it is our game. And you have to be wary of where your hands are. You know, the offensive player is so creative of drawing contact. And then they don't call the foul in the playoffs. And so now it's a different game in the playoffs to where you got certain types of sentiments. And
the Kyle Lowry syndrome. You can't hoop without the whistle.
And that's what people say. You know, you get labeled a guy who can with great gamesmanship, but in the playoffs, that gamesmanship may not translate. And that's where I struggle with the game right now. And so, you know, we got the in-season tournament. That's really good for the game, for the competition level. But how do we sustain that tough competitive nature that can be, I'm not saying overly physical, but like you can play defense, you know, you can bump a guy coming across the lane, you know, a guy can't flail his arms into a shot. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I remember what Nocioni said when I was like a rookie, and this is 2010. He was just like, man, I was like, what do you think about the game now? Just discussing stuff. He's like, bro, dudes are too good not to be able to touch them. Mm-hmm. So he's like, one thing that I'm getting frustrated with, and Nocioni, legendary Argentinian player, but just right. Like, nah, I'm being frustrated because you can't stop Kobe, you can't stop Joe John, you can't stop Melo by not being able to touch him. So what are you supposed to do? And then he's just saying from a competitor standpoint, and like a 3-and-D or whatever else, it's like, shit, how else do I make a living? You know what I'm saying? But I just think anytime dudes are getting, you seeing dudes in a week span, it's like, 7 scores of 50 and over, like individually, like that's kind of insane, bro. This is an NBA, dog. Like, not saying the dudes can't stop them. I'm just like, shit, I just, what's the point of going through shoot around? Or watching film of a Knicks getting 55. Like, every blue moon used to get 50. Yeah. And be like, he got 50. Now you get, bro, 50 is, we should do a DraftKings where we bet on who's going to get 50 again. Because it's going to pop this up in a week, dog. Like, Brad like Beal barely plays and goes and gets 42 every time he plays.
Right. Well, we were talking about this, and please, I'm teeing this up for you.
What?
If you score 35 or more, what's going to be the result for the team?
I feel as though we're going to win. Like, I never understood, like, how dudes get 35 plus and can't win. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Or you see dudes have these miraculous games of 40. For one time I played with Trae Young, and granted, it probably was my fault because I was on the team. But like, yeah, 48 and 15. And I'm like, damn, imagine losing with 48 and 15. I'm like, bro, I can never, if I went and shot my load to get 40, it's like shooting every bullet in your gun and not killing a deer.
And I feel like that's the difference. That's the difference in our game, where you can score 60, 70 points and lose.
Yeah.
And I think we have, it's like the creator economy that we're in, or the social influencer economy that we're in. It's more about the performance than the actual win. And I do think, you know, statistics are taking precedence over, you know, the team aspect of it. This is easy and simple, because as we keep going over this thing where it's like you see these incredible performances, but how many times have we seen the MVP win the championship in the same year?
Yeah.
Like LeBron, Steph were the last two guys, and then they just had this great performances last week against each other. And they're both, you know, talking after the game, like, how do we still do it at this old age? And you still have a sense of like what you're playing for in terms of like what's priority. And so that's my problem with the game right now, where we're glorifying these numbers so much without it coming with like within like the team aspect of it. Now everybody's going to play one way. And so now how are you going to teach a guy to cut? How are you going to teach a guy to set a screen and roll? How are you going to teach a guy to, you know, you just make a back cut just to clear out space? Or sprint the lane. Like, everybody just like, I'm trying to get the rebound, I'm trying to go to work. Now every game is going to be a all-star game. Hopefully we have a different all-star game this year, but like, that's where we're trending towards. Like,
Hennessy and Mitchell & Ness have come together for the Ultimate Drop, a limited edition collection to celebrate Hennessy's continued partnership with the NBA, because some things just go together, like Evan and myself.
Hey, man. Remember when we met back in the day at Tim Grover's attack facility? Mm-hmm. I think it was like 08. I was finishing up my freshman year, and you were about to prepare to get that bag, right?
Yes, my extension year.
We met in 08. In 2010, we fast-forward to be each other's teammates. Mm-hmm. I obviously thought I was better than you. Then the first day of practice, I go baseline. And you Brian blocked my shot before
that
Brian.
That was a good block, G. Bro, I remember that.
Bro, that was an amazing block. I'm looking like, bro, what just happened back there? And then I'm like thinking, talking to my agent, like, bro, you just said I was better than this dude?
Look, on the court, you're surrounded by a collection of personalities, egos, and talent. But when the pieces come together, that's when you form a great team. The same thing is true when you mix a great drink. Different ingredients come together for the first time, complementing one another to make something out of this world. And beyond the drinks, this drop with Hennessy and Mitchell & Ness celebrates the intersection of basketball with art, music, and fashion. elements of culture that represent ways the fans and players pay homage to the game.
The exclusive collection will have a limited drop available for both in retail and online. Check out at Hennessy US on Instagram for more information. Hennessy, without your spirit, it's only a game. 21 and older, please drink responsibly.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
You know, who the kids want to be. Like, we teaching our kids, hey, man, you ain't got to play defense because you can't. And, hey, man, like, my son's a great passer. I'm like, man, you pass too much, bro. You ain't going to the league if you pass the ball because that ain't important anymore. That's what I'm worried about.
And you want to know what's so crazy too, G? Like, you playing with NBA players, like, it's not bad. Like, I see you just keep cooking, but like, bro, you need to shoot, like, you need to score 70. Or like, you see dudes, it's like, so you play with other pros, like, there was one dude that needed to get 70 points. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the move the ball around, distribute the ball around, like, you playing with other capable players. Like, sometimes I always wonder, like, damn, where did that 43 shots come from?
This, like, the Kobe game. He at halftime he was like, "Oh, y'all don't want to play today."
Yeah.
All right, cool. Like, they was losing. They were losing, and he was like, "No, y'all don't want to play today. I'm going to win the game by myself." Like, that was what made that game legendary because he said to himself, he said to his teammates, "All right, y'all on BS today. Like, all right, I'm not wasting my time. Move out the way." And I don't think you don't see that as much. Or you don't see that at all. And so I'm watching the game. I watched the Atlanta-Dallas game and never at any point did I think Dallas is going to lose. You know what I mean? And so it was just like, what are we doing out here? Yeah. I mean, shout out to Luka. Like, you got to go get 73. That's one thing that I don't want to get lost in translation. Like, you got to go get 73. Like, you just can't just pull up and just be like, all right, I'm going to walk into this. Like, you had to go get it.
Yeah, Prodigy got it, for sure.
Man.
Point. Forward.
Today, we have one of our favorite guests. Evan and I have been seeing this guy on most of the time on Thursdays throughout winter and spring in the evenings as our place of peace. And as we dove into the world of basketball, he's done so much. He's become a household favorite as the popularity of basketball has exploded. They have an amazing cast. Now with Inside the NBA, please welcome Ernie Johnson Jr.
Hey, can I say something real quick?
Yes, sir.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Andre. Happy 40th birthday to you. Yeah.
Yo, that was pretty good, bro.
That was really good. Yes.
That was impressive, bro. Ernie Johnson just saying happy birthday to you. Like,
you know, I can do that lounge lizard act every now and then, you know. That's my karaoke go-to voice. There you go. Happy birthday, yes, man. 40 of those
Thank
things,
you.
Man.
Yes, yes. Yes, I'm happy to be here. I believe so. I am happy to be here.
I assume you celebrated your 40th probably with 36 holes of golf.
Sadly, no.
Oh, my. Things have really changed for you. Man.
I'm trying to explain to people, like, I have, like, a real job. Like, I don't play golf.
Oh, that's got to be painful.
It's very painful to my soul.
Yeah, because I know how much you love hitting it, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in my golf studio right now, actually. So I'll get like 15 minutes here and there where I hit a few shots. So my handicap's still single digit, but it's high. It's not good. It's not what it was.
Wow. No, because I know how much you love it, man. We had you on our golf coverage before, man. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, sometime in March, that's all I'll say. I'm going to have some fun playing golf.
Very good. Very good. And Evan, it's great to be with you, man. I really
appreciate
you all.
No doubt. Thanks for jumping on, Pause. We definitely appreciate you. Definitely appreciate you pulling up and everything you've done for the game of basketball media. So this is going to be a crazy interview. So we'll start off first. And obviously we all know who Ernie Johnson is now. You're just inducted into the Hall of Fame. But let's go into who Ernie Johnson was to start, way before he became famous. Famous for inside the NBA.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you, my original dream and my goal was to be a big league baseball player because that's what my dad did. Played for the Braves back in the 50s. And I somehow seemed to lack the talent to carry that through. I did play 1 year of baseball at Georgia. I walked on as a freshman and then was told to walk off as a sophomore. And so that was it, man. And so then you're kind of like a lot of college kids, you're saying, so where am I going to be? And what am I going to do? And I had thought about being an English teacher and a baseball coach. And my dad was actually, a broadcaster for ages and ages doing Braves games. And so he never really pushed me in that direction, but I thought I'd give it a try and kind of worked at the campus radio station in Athens and, enjoyed getting into the games for free and that kind of thing and covering sports. And that's really where it started. And then, you just kind of pay your dues along the way, Evan. You work in little TV stations and get your experience and see how far it'll take you. And now I've been at Turner for the last 35 years. I can't believe that either.
Let's dig in deeper because you said that your dad was a baseball player. He won a World Series back in 57, right? With Hank Aaron.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what was that like? What were those early days and memories? Like you saw some pretty great baseball, but also some pretty serious things off the field in regards to, Mr. Aaron and the civil rights movement. And, you picked up and moved from the Midwest and Yankee area down to the South. So I'm sure it's a bunch of different, kind of culture shock for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I was, I have two older sisters, and so they got to enjoy, watching my dad actually play more than I did, because I was born in 56. He retired in 59. And so it's like, I'd seen videos of him. But my experience with him was more just tagging along, going to the ballpark when he was calling games. And it was, as a kid, man, that's a great way to grow up. You go to the stadium hours before the first pitch. You're hanging around the batting cage. Hank Aaron's asking you how your little league team is doing. It's like, this is ridiculous. And so it was a blessed way to grow up, for a sports loving kid to be able to do that. And the move, when you're 8 or 9 years old and you're living in Milwaukee and they say you're moving to Atlanta, I had no idea what Atlanta was. I had no clue. But basically that's where I've grown up, down here in the South. And it was, I watched Henry during his chase of Babe Ruth's record. And then you become aware, obviously, of how difficult a task that was for him. It's enough to chase a legend's home run record, but it's another to do it under the circumstances he was doing it, because there was a lot of racial stuff going on. There was a lot of hate. And to Henry Aaron's credit, he was strong enough to withstand all of that and then become, the greatest home run hitter I'd ever seen.
Let's talk about your transition and how you start out. I think you made your first debut on Inside the NBA in 1990. And There's been a lot of discussions recently. Evan and I have been talking about it, you know, how the game has changed in the last 4 or 5 years. But going back to 1990, you know, kind of talk to us about how the halftime show was then and then how sports media has progressed, you know, through these different times. Because we also spoke to, there's only been a few players throughout NBA history who have actually changed the game in a dramatic way. And we were speaking to a friend last night and he said, Magic was one, MJ was another, and Steph Curry was another. But from your world, you know, how have you seen the coverage of the game and, you know, the content being driven from, you know, around the game, how that's changed over time?
Yeah, I mean, when I started out, Craig Sager was actually the studio host when I started at TNT. And Craig always wanted to be out in the field and being a sideline reporter. And they made the change. And so, I mean, when I first sat in that chair, I mean, it was just like every other show. It was really just a highlight driven kind of halftime show where you just go through the games. Here's a highlight. Here's a score. Here's a highlight. Here's a score. We'll be back after this. Here's a couple more highlights and boom, I'll see you after the game. And it was me by myself. And so that can get a little boring for the viewer. And I think that we, as Cheryl Miller and Reggie Theus, Dick Versace, mm-hmm. folks like that started joining
Dick
me.
It gives you
an opportunity, to kind of be more of who you are, not just sitting down to say, okay, let's spit out these highlights and that's it. So we're able to have more conversations like this, and we're able to, you know, when you have an analyst next to you, you're able to really pan where they've been and have, you know, situations that they've been in and that you can tap into that. So that was the biggest change early on for me. And then when you know, Kenny was in between, you know, 10 days late in his career, every now and then we'd say, hey, let's have Kenny Smith in. And the first time we had him in the studio, I remember talking to Tim Kiley, our producer, and we're saying, man, this guy gets it. Man, he's just got this natural ability to communicate and to not lose who he is at all. I mean, he's, you know, Kenny's got this New York thing, calls himself Ken NY, you know, it's like he's got all of this stuff going on. And so that's he was an immediate fit. And so he and I had a great time, and it was so much fun in those early days just to be able to bounce things off of Kenny. And he was never at a loss for something to say, because we've seen enough guys. I've seen enough guys in the course of my career. When the red light goes on, a guy who was a great post game interview and was always, you know, had a great personality, you thought he'd be great on TV. When the red light went on, it was like, where did that guy go? He just disappeared. That was never a situation with Kenny, and obviously never a situation with Chuck. When he was always the most quotable guy in the world as a player, and always spoke his mind, and he never changed a bit. And I think that's one of the reasons that the three of us have been together for more than 20 years, is that they never lost sight of who they are and just brought that to the screen.
So when you sit there and you added Shaq to the last part, was there ever a point, because I'm assuming you went to, you know, school for this, you're, you know, big time media guy, were you ever like, damn, I'm sitting here with three ex-athletes, how can I carry the ass across the finish line? And like, you know what I mean? Like, was there ever something like that? Did you feel like, yo, I don't want to have to babysit in a sense, or was there a leeway of making sure like, yo, there'll be a grace period? Or was the first day you were just like, when you all four together, just like, yo, this is, we're going to be here forever?
You know, Evan, that's a great question. And look, I've never lost sight of the fact that how privileged I am to be sitting in the chair that I'm sitting in. And it was never, oh, how am I going to carry these guys? It was like, how am I going to keep up? And you name the sport. I mean, look, in the course of the decades I've been at Turner, you know, I had NFL studio with Ken Stabler. I've had baseball studio and baseball play-by-play with John Smoltz and Cal Ripken and Dennis Eckersley and Jimmy Rollins and Pedro Martinez. That's I mean, I'm the luckiest guy in the world, because you can't help but, when you hang out with folks like that, just learn even more about the game. You think you know a lot until you sit there with guys who have played it at the highest level. And so I feel just very fortunate to have been able to do this for this long. And especially in the case of inside the NBA, look, there's always a TV executive who thinks, you know what, I have a better mix of guys in mind. Let's try this guy with this guy, this guy. I mean, the only change we've made is Shaq, you know, and so you add the world's biggest kid to those shenanigans that we've got going on there. And it's going to be a good time. And so, I mean, you think about it, Shaq's been there more than a dozen years with us too. Yeah. And so, it's the world's greatest job. I call it a get to job. And you know, when I talk to college kids, you know, we're in journalism school, and I was doing that just the other day at my alma mater at Georgia. So it's a get to, not a got to. We've seen enough folks who have got to jobs who walk into work like this, like, oh man, I got to do this again today. And for me, it's a get to, and it's not like I show up at work like this every day. It's a get to job. I mean, every job has its moments, but to be able to do this for this long with this group, man, that's off the charts.
I'm still in that, by the way. You got to get to.
Yeah, you had to get two jobs, right?
I was thinking that.
I was also wondering, you talked about earlier about trying to say keep up. How have you been able to stand out? You know, you're one of the bigger, besides, you know, obviously Doris Burke, you're one of the biggest, you know, media personalities in regards to basketball. How are you able to stand out, keep your authenticity, and, you know, continue to build that following? Up there with Tony Hawk, black folks love you just as much, bro. to be honest. Am I lying? People will be like, nah.
Dude, I got a stack of invites to the barbecue. I enjoy that. And I realize that. I think the way that you stand out is not trying to. If indeed I'm standing out, I mean, the thing about our show that's great is nobody tries to make the show about themselves. And I think that's one of the biggest downfalls that a show can have, is if somebody is trying to make it about them. But that's never been the case with us. You know, everything that happens, you know, some nights you're going to be talking the next day about, oh, did you see what Chuck did? Oh, did you see what Shaq, did you see Kenny toss Shaq into the tree? Did you see all of that stuff? Just kind of happens. And so nobody's trying to make the show about themselves. And I think when that happens, when there's kind of that selfless feel, then everybody stands out and the show stands out. So that's, I think we've been able to succeed in that area simply because of the personalities there and the fact that, hey, look, we're four guys who just love each other. And I don't want that to sound corny or any of that, but it's true. It's true. We've been through a lot of stuff in each of our lives that we've been able to be there for them. And so I think it really begins with that mutual respect and that admiration and that love for each other.
Now, you spoke earlier about, you know, doing baseball and then, you know, we spoke about golf, you know.
Yeah.
Doing golf coverage. How do you not switch up who you are, but how are you thinking about tailoring your voice or the tone to the audience, you know, throughout these different sports or during the Olympics or just the vast array of things that you get a chance to cover?
Yeah, how do you put the stick in your ass?
you realize the events that you're doing. And so I can still remember the first time I did a golf tournament. That was back in 1995. And that was the first year of 20-something that I did the PGA Championship for TNT as we're working with our friends at CBS. And so the same vibe that you use in a studio show when you're chopping it up with Kenny and Shaq and Chuck, that's not going to really work on a golf telecast. The telecast doesn't lend itself to that, doesn't lend itself to long storytelling. So you learn that in a hurry. And, you know, one of the best mentors I had for that was Vern Lundquist, because Vern and I were working together on those CBS TNT PGA championships. And I remember sitting in a golf cart with him at Riviera and just saying, hey, what can you tell me about what I'm about to get into? He said, you're a caption writer. He said, folks can see what's going on the screen. You just got to put a caption to it. So don't worry about getting long-winded and talking and talking and talking. And then when you're working with Jim Nantz, it's like, I'm not going to come on like this. Not when Jim's saying, good afternoon, friends. You know, it's like you realize the kind of tone that is set by the event you're covering. And then it's going to that's going to be different from when you're doing a baseball game and something gets exciting late in the game. And so you just learn that through reps. I think that's I think that's the best way to put it.
Well, you've done a lot of different events, and obviously I've been trying to get out to events, but Dre's been super busy playing. What's been some events or world, you know, events that's been super fun to cover? You suggest a basketball crowd to really jump out and go explore that shocked you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there are certainly moments that you witness in an arena. I mean, look, when LeBron went for that, 29 or whatever he did in Detroit, you know, and that run, you know, when you're in that arena, when you're in the arena, when Vince is dunking, you know, in Oakland and, you know, that dunk contest, that was like a playoff game, you know, every time he took off, it was a very unique feeling. But at the same time, like getting to do the Olympics and these are things that mean a lot to me because I witnessed them, because you know the history and the backstory of how they occurred. But there was a guy named Dan Jansen who was a great speed skater. And I happened to be doing speed skating at the Olympics in both France and Norway. And Dan was the best in the world, but had a lot of personal issues going on. He lost his sister to leukemia back in the late 80s while he was at the Olympics. And then in his races where he was favored to win, he fell in both races, which is unheard of. And he stuck with it through the years. And finally, in his last chance in Norway, and I'm calling this, he's in the 1,000 meters and he wins in world record time and then skates a victory lap holding his daughter, Jane, who was named for his late sister. And so the emotions of a situation like that, you never forget that, man. It's just like, it supersedes any of the competition, actually. And those are the kind of stories that make sports so great. And, you know, in golf, shoot, Jack Nicklaus played his last major at St. Andrews at the Open Championship. And we're on the air that day. You know, this is not weekend coverage that's ABC. This is the Thursday, Friday coverage. And we've got it. And here's Jack coming down to, he's not going to make the cut. But he's playing the 18th at the Old Course, this birthplace of golf, and he birdies the 18th. And to be on the air when that was happening and to know when to shut up is the important thing there. You know, it's not like, again, it's not like, oh, wow, this is huge for Jack. I'm just going to talk the whole time. No, you wrote captions to it. And it was just a marvelous moment. And again, one of many I felt so privileged to be a part of.
That's beautiful. And
hey there, it's Matt Norlander with the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast. And yes, we are in the thick of the college hoop season. Our pod runs at least 3 times a week and covers everything you need to know, from the power conference team to the mid-majors, the scoops, the stories, game predictions, previews, huge recaps, everything. We cover it all. To find us, search Eye on College Basketball podcast wherever you get your pods.
I kind of want to go in that direction because it feels like that's where we're taking it in terms of obstacles and how do you overcome things and, you know, your battle with cancer. And, you know, my father passed in 2013 from cancer. And, you know, just the awareness that and being able to give yourself to the entire basketball community, the sports community, and be open about, you know, what you're going through and then how you're tackling it. This thing is very inspirational, and a lot of people, I think, feel those effects. And in turn, like, that's the energy you're driving. And so I wanted to ask, you know, what advice would you give others who are facing, you know, obstacles similar to what you battled with cancer?
You know, it's going back so many years because the first time I've had cancer twice. And the first time was 2003, was non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And the thing about it, you're dealing with this, and it was a slow growing thing. So nobody out there knew what I was dealing with. aside from some of the folks at Turner and my family, obviously. But it wasn't until 2006 when I started swelling up my lymph nodes and that kind of thing. And then you just have to be, look, people are inviting you into their homes every night. And when something doesn't look right, people are going to notice. And I thought the best way to handle that was just honestly say, look, this is what is going on. I've had this for a while now. We've taken an approach of waiting to see what direction it's going to take. And I'm going to start chemotherapy in June. And so, and I think that allowed people to say, rather than just point fingers and say, geez, what the heck is going on with him? It's like, okay, we understand. And yeah, so I had chemo in 06 for that and went into remission. And that's been, that's everything's been great on that end since 2006. I had prostate cancer a few years ago and took care of that. And so it's just, we all have stuff, fellas. I mean, everybody out there, everybody who's watching us has stuff too. And I never wanted people to think, hey, look, cancer means you got to stop everything. No, we're gonna fight our way through this. And I was kind of, publicly doing that while dealing with it's a very private situation. But if it can help people, then that's if somebody can take some inspiration from that or take some kind of a strength from that, it's great. And Craig Sager was a great example of that too. We saw Craig before he passed. All he wanted to do was be on the sidelines. There were days where he had chemo in the morning and work a game that night, which I couldn't imagine doing, but he did it.
Yeah, and that example really sets you up because you just got an award recently for the Award of Excellence for your help with cancer research and fundraising and, a lot of different philanthropic work. How have you been able to keep diving into that and make that part of your focal point, considering, it's such a, crazy schedule and you have your own personal, uphill battles to struggle with and then overcome?
Evan, I think it's it goes back to something else I like to say is that this job is not who I am. It's what I do. If some people can look at me, hey, you're the TNT guy. Yeah, that's my job. But look, I'm a husband. I'm a father of six. I got five grandkids. That's who I am. And also who I am are the things that I deal with, whether it's the cancer stuff we talked about, or look, Cheryl and I lost a son, we lost Michael a couple of years ago. And he lived this remarkable life of 33 years. And eventually it was muscular dystrophy that took him from us. But it's, those are the things that make you who you are and what you must do in my role. Look, I'm on TV, but I've got to, as my dad always said, just be yourself. And so that's what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going through. This is what I feel comfortable sharing, that kind of thing. And so, again, we all have stuff, but not everybody who has stuff is sitting on TV and being in your living room. And so you got to feel your way through that and decide what's appropriate to share and how you basically handle that.
So,
go ahead, both of you. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
At the same time.
No. He has such great insight and he can read the room. And, he always has this awareness about him where he just, and he can see where things are trending too. It feels like to us, like you just have a great calmness to you. And in the world that we're in now, we saw Turner being brought into a conglomerate with Warner Brothers Discovery. And we're seeing, the streaming and how that's disrupted. People are cutting cable. These kids are, they're consuming content in a totally different way. The metrics are being, rated and they're being viewed differently on how they calculate it all. Where do you see the sports landscape going in terms of how it's consumed? And are you paying attention to where we're headed in terms of coverage around sports, which is pretty much what you do? And so what do you think the next generation wants to see? Because it seems like we're moving away from, it's more entertainment, it's more so personalities. And it's like, I hope we don't get away from you know, we talk about the where the game's going, and I don't want to get away from the fundamentals of the game. I don't want to get away from the camaraderie of team sport. You know, I don't want to see every night somebody can score 70 because that's just, you know, we just shooting shots and there's no defense. You know, right. Like, where do you think we're headed, and how can we save ourselves? It's almost like global warming. Like, at some point we got to reverse this thing. Like, how can we save ourselves from, you know, getting away from what it was? Like E.T. says, from when it was lit, like what it was intended for. Because I think we forget that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously the landscape is so totally different than when I started at Turner, you know, where it was just, you know, I hope you gather around your TV set tonight. And there was no, I don't know that there was DVR and that kind of thing. It was like, if you want to watch a game, you better be in front of the set. And now right. things are totally different, and streaming has changed a lot too. And then the way that you present the game itself, it's not enough to just do the game anymore. Now you like the Manning cast, and we've done things that during All-Star Weekend where the four of us sit here and watch the game and call it. I say call it, but I'm not really doing play by play because these guys are arguing about what kind of snacks we've got, you know. And it's like it's kind of like, what's going to be the most entertaining way, and what are the options? And so I think, like, we haven't gotten away from, hey, this year for the All-Star game, we're not going to do a traditional broadcast. We're just going to do these four clowns watching the game. You know, it's just, here's another option for you. And so mm-hmm. I think I don't think that's a bad thing that we provide other ways to, if this is going to be more entertaining for you than a traditional broadcast, okay, fine. Let's see how that works. But I don't even know, like, guys, 5 years from now, how are we going to be watching games? What's mm-hmm. what's it going to be like? I mean, and when we do March Madness, when I'm walking to the studio to when I was doing the New York studio, I'd be walking down the street with a Starbucks and watching the game on my phone. You know, it's like, I never saw any of that coming. So I think a lot of the things we didn't see coming are going to be right in front of us, you know, as a reality in no time, especially the way things have grown so much in the last few years. And it's as far as the game goes, I don't know if, you know, you want to avoid the, you know, old man, you know, thing, like, well, back in my day, they played the right. game this way. The game is right. played in a different way. Kids grow up watching the game in a different way. Kids grow mm-hmm. up, you know, kids growing up now saying, well, I guess you got to score. I guess your team's got to score 160 to win in the NBA. I guess that's the way it is. So I guess it's got to be, you know, you better, you know, hone your game so it's all offensive. I mean, I don't know how many kids grow up anymore thinking, hey, it's cool to play defense. Probably zero.
Shit, they're now paying for it right now. So
well, I know. Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And look, social media is, yeah, I mean, that whole landscape, you know, to consider that part of our show every night is throwing in comments from people who are watching. You know, it used to be because that immediacy, your ability to react to whatever is said on the air or what happens in a game, everything's instantaneous. And so there was a time where we said, now we don't need to put any tweets on, or we don't need to do that. And now it's an integral part of our coverage is somebody out there said this about you, Chuck, and boom, here we go. And it opens up another avenue of discussion or clowning.
I want to speak to that as well. Because we've seen it a few times where, you know, as an analyst, you have to call the game how you see it. And sometimes you have to be critical of a player. Mm-hmm. And how have you seen, has that changed over time? You know, I feel like sometimes is a player sensitive, or is he in his right to, you know, have an issue with, you know, someone overly critiquing him? Because now we live in a social media world where, like, Jordan Poole is, you know, that guy now, where at one point it was JaVale McGee was that guy. And it's like, I understand, yes, you're calling the game how you see it. You want to play it at the highest level, but there is a fine line between, you know, being critical of a guy and using a guy as a way to, you know, spark some controversy or get some, a few more likes, or, you know, get some attention.
Sure. I mean, I think, again, no, it's knowing your role from my standpoint. Look, I can point out maybe a guy's deficiencies numbers wise. Hey, look, he's down a 3-point percentage. Hey, his, you know, his plus minus is this. Hey, you know, what's going on? But I think player to player, when you got Shaq and Kenny and Chuck, look, these guys have played the game at the highest level. They've got championships. And so for them to say, this is part of his game I think he needs to improve on. And I think one of the things Shaq has always said, look, if he gets on Joel Embiid, it's because he wants Joel Embiid to be the best possible player he can be. So I think players have to realize that too. And none of the guys on our show want to go after somebody. Right. You know, you can certainly look at somebody's behavior, man, and you say, okay, what's your take on what John Morant, you know, like John Morant's situation? Okay. And you speak from the heart, you speak honestly, you know the situation, you know the stories, and this is your opinion on it. Okay, that should be fine. So I think it behooves us to know what we're talking about, but also for players to realize, look, these guys aren't against us. These guys are paid to analyze. And again, if their analysis is going to spur somebody to say, you know what, he's probably right. I probably do need to get back on defense better. I probably do need to run the floor more. But if you're going to just take that and say, no, that's just old men who don't understand today's game, then I think you're making a mistake.
Mm-hmm. So I guess to lead off on that, you guys, he's been on the Gilbert Arenas show. What do you say? You never had any crazy NBA players have crazy responses to you, but the best three-point shooter in the world. What was that young guy's name? Michael. He shot versus Kenny the Jet.
I saw some of that. It's, you know, that's not the way I remembered it. I remembered us bringing this guy in and giving him his props for setting this record. And then you're in the studio and you've got NBA players in there and you're on Kenny's court where Kenny shoots against everybody. And Kenny knocked down three in a row, you know? And so I don't even want to get into any of all that rehashing of what happened there. Right. No, I'm sorry that he didn't enjoy his time with us, but we certainly had no agenda to say, hey, let's really go after this guy. No, I mean, shoot, the guy he brought a little kid in that he'd been tutoring on how to play, and the kid beat Shaq in a free throw contest. Nobody's talking about that. It was a great moment.
Yeah, no, that's real.
No, I say this all the time. I know a lot of people that can shoot. But I want to see you run down the court fast as you can five times. And then the fifth time, run into a top of the key three. No hesitation. And you got to make 8 out of 10. Now, that's the difference between guys in the league and guys that aren't in the league. And so I don't have any. Yeah, they'll be all right. It's the reason why they are in the league.
Oh, yeah.
That's real.
Clowning moments. I know y'all have a lot of fun. Make sure you got me. Okay. Y'all have a lot of fun on set. I think that's the thing that bring viewers, like, it's like a real homey feel. Like, I'm at home, I'm relaxing, I'm with the guys, I can see something that's just, like, relatable, and there's a lot of clowning. Give us some.
There are so many, I don't know that I can even, I can't narrow them all down, but I mean, it's like back when Magic was working with us, we closed the studio to Chuck one night. We called the studio the Champions Club. So you had to have a ring to get in to do halftime. And we totally surprised him with it. He had no idea it was coming. We even had actual, like, security guards outside the studio on a red carpet. So Magic walks me in and says, hey, he's with me. He doesn't have a ring, but he's with me, so he can come in. Kenny walks in with his, you know, yeah, I've got a couple with Houston. Chuck comes up outside the studio and says, so y'all trying to play a trick on the Chuckster. But that was one of the greatest things I'd ever seen. And that's what makes it work, because everybody can hit, you know, everybody can take it and everybody can dish it out. Nobody gets their feelings hurt. Everybody can laugh at themselves. And so I've seen enough guys on TV who have NBA resumes who say, yeah, you can go this far, but don't do this. I mean, we used to weigh Chuck when Chuck was saying he wanted to get down to his playing weight. And on the air live, he would get on a scale. And that was early on in our run. And so, you know, it's that, it's diaper changing contests. It's Kenny trying to mimic Kobe's commercial about jumping over the Aston Martin, you know, and then we wind up running Kenny down in the parking lot. I mean, it's all those things. And so that's been the great part about the job. Sure, for the NBA fan, for the diehard who wants his analysis, we're there for that. But we're also there with the stuff, just the other stuff that even if you're not a huge NBA fan, you're like, hey, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we appreciate you. We appreciate the time. You know, like you said, like you were an integral part of our childhood, and just what you do for the game of basketball is amazing. And I think we all appreciate it. We all understand it. And we just want to thank you. And to many more years of success, ET and I will come into the studio. We want to do an internship and see like what are the ingredients on how to build this special thing that you've built. And so we would love to continue to chop it up with you and get me on. And you'll give me an excuse to get on a golf course. So please, please accept our application to be interns.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'll have a 35 and a 40-year-old interns walking around the studio, having Shaq and Charles say, "Hey, get me this, get me that." Yeah, I don't know that that's what you really want out of your life at this point. But if you're willing, we got a spot for you.
So we'll be free. Interns aren't free anymore, so they won't get paid.
No, they are in our place. They are in our place. They're free. Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
No, I appreciate you too. Thanks, and again, happy birthday, man.
No, thank you. I really appreciate that. I had two folks sing to me. One was a rapper, and then you gave me your rendition. So you,
I bet his was better.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
Enjoyed it, guys. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Take care.
Yeah, be good. Later.
Without a ball, it's just a court. And without your spirit, it's only a game. So, together with the fans, we bring our best. For your next pregame, let's share a twist on a classic, the Hennessy Margarita. A squeeze of fresh lime juice and a bit of agave syrup, topped off with ice and a salted rim. Mix it, shake it, pour it, and enjoy the spirit of the NBA. Hennessy, without your spirit, it's only a game. 21 and older, please drink responsibly.